Mr. Chairman, if you would allow me, I would like my brothers and sisters to loosen their limbs if they stand up and take a deep breath before sitting down again. All of you, please. Take a deep breath or two and loosen your limbs and you can relax. The previous two lectures, Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, the previous two speakers, you know, have been dealing with this theme of the East and the West getting together, meeting. The East meets the West. It's a kind of a symposium we have been having. And in that symposium, the subject of law seems to be very technical and very dry. And to build bridges between the East and the West, as now, most probably in the minds of the organizers, they have taken me as a man from the East. And they are right in that I have really come from the East. I am a man who was born in India some 60 years ago. So I am really a man of the East. But now, since the theme that has been selected for me is religious, about Islam, now I take exception to Islam being described as a religion of the East. If we take Islam to be an Eastern religion, then Judaism and Christianity are equally Eastern. Because Islam, Judaism and Christianity, all these three originate in the same geographical area in the Middle East. Though I personally come from India, and my forefathers were Muslims, born Muslims, originally in the very dim past Hindus. But now, to share this East and West, for the moment if I agree that Islam is from the East, and the Western religions would be then Judaism and Christianity, for the purpose of this discussion this evening, I will accept that. So what is the relationship between these three? Judaism, Christianity and Islam. In reality, from the Muslim point of view, these three are not three religions. From the Muslim point of view, it's the one and the same religion on different levels. And in the fundamentals of the teachings of Moses, Jesus and Muhammad, there is not an iota of difference. Sounds surprising, doesn't it? In the fundamentals of the teachings of Moses, Jesus and Muhammad, there is not an iota of difference between these three. And I prove it to you. I said, you see, the very first commandment, as it was given by God Almighty to the Holy Prophet Moses, in Hebrew, this is what it sounds like. The Shema Israel Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. Which means, hear, O Israel, the Lord, our God, the Lord is one. Some 1,300 years after Moses, a learned man of the Jews, described as a scribe, he poses the question to Jesus in the Gospel of St. Mark, chapter 12, verse 29. He said, Master, in the Hebrew language, Rabbi, what commandment is the first of all? And Jesus answers and says unto him in the Hebrew language, Shema Israel Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. Hear, O Israel, the Lord, our God, the Lord is one. He repeated word for word what was given by Moses some 1300 years before. Not an iota of difference in the fundamental as given by Moses and Jesus. Coming to Muhammad, some 600 years later, after Jesus Christ, a Christian deputation approaches Muhammad in Medina and they have a discussion, a dialogue for 3 days and three nights. During the course of this dialogue, the spokesman for the Christian poses the question. He said, O Muhammad, all I tell us now, what is your concept of God? And Muhammad, as the Muslims believe, was made to say, on the authority of God, in the Arabic language, he said, Qul huwa Allahu ahad. Say, He is God, the one and only. Muhammad said, Ahad. Jesus said, Echad. Moses said, Echad. I'm asking, what is the difference? Actually, it is the same word meaning the same thing. The difference between ahad and ikhad in Arabic, if it was a blackboard here, I would have written it for you. If I wrote ahad, and to make it into ikhad, I just have to put a dot on the ha. It becomes ha. That's all. It's only the difference of a dot in the calligraphy, in writing. But in the meaning, the sense, 100% the same. So we Muslims, we say that in the fundamentals of the teachings of the prophets, no difference. Then these differences that are there, we say these were out of necessity. See, Islam, we say, is the culmination of the teachings of Moses and Jesus, brought to perfection. The Holy Prophet Moses, we Muslims, we accept him as our own prophet. As we accept all the Jewish prophets as our prophets. That Moses was catering for the needs of his people. They had just been rescued from the Egyptian bondage. They were traveling in the Sinai Peninsula, oasis to oasis. A nation under those circumstances needed a law that would give them quick justice, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. There was no time for lengthy litigations. There was no time for putting a man in prison. That antisocial character, the adulterer, kill him, stone him to death, get rid of him. It was more merciful to kill him, stone him, than to leave him in the desert to die of hunger and thirst. And he becomes an object lesson for others. He said, you see, this guy here, according to our system, he could have had 100 wives. Because there was no law. There was no law among the Jews as to the limit of the wives. Solomon, if you read the Holy Bible, we are told, had 1,000 wives and concubines. 700 wives and 300 concubines. Altogether 1,000. There was no law against the number of wives that one could have. So, under those circumstances, if one was not enough, you could have taken another. If two were not enough, you could have taken four. Why did you go and interfere with somebody else's property? Despoiling somebody else's rights? This guy, he deserves death. Stone him to death. And to me, this is the law. Eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. Eye for an eye. Quick justice. Get moving. There's work to be done. This was the philosophy, the psychology behind the laws that were given. And these laws, we Muslims believe, were given by God Almighty for the needs of the children of Israel. But laws have a tendency to change the characters of people over a period of time. Any law, every law, they change the characters of people. Hitlerized Germany, you know, one of the most cultured nations in Europe, the Germans, supposed to be. That nation incinerated 6 million Jews. All right, some say it's a fifth. All right, if not 6,600,000, if not 6,000. If not 600, I say even that is dramatic enough. Just because they were Jews, if they destroy a people, I say it's dramatic enough, whether they were 600 or 6 million. How could this nation do such a thing like that? The land of Goethe and Beethoven, you know, cultured nation. How can they do that? No, we can all be programmed. You see, under Hitler, they programmed the Germans, they said these are parasites. You know, these people here, you know, the Jews are like this, the Jews are like that. And you, once you work up a nation on that level, emotionally, and even the good-hearted people, they can see what's going on. But it's a closer eye. They say, look, they deserve it. They deserve it. And they allow 6 million Jews to perish. Lord. In our own country. We are living in this country, everything is based on color. And because everything is based on color, we become color conscious to such an extent that from my own experience I can tell you that since I'm a talker, I talk religion, I love to talk, and I have been inviting people, the whites, Jews, Christians, of course the blacks as well, Indians, Africans, coloreds, but I'm talking generally about the whites now. I have had hundreds of whites coming to my home. No, I enjoy them. They enjoy my dinner, they enjoy my food, my curry and rice, my spices. They enjoy it, and they enjoy my talk. Because everything that I'm speaking is from an angle which the man hasn't seen before. So he enjoys my talk, and he enjoys my food. But no white man has ever invited me to his home for a cup of tea, yet. And I ask them, you know, they meet me subsequently in the street, Mr. and Mrs. Daniels, Leopold Products, I don't know if they still exist in Mobile. Leopold Products. He was at my home. Mr. and Mrs. Beer Brothers, you know, the furniture people, they were at my home. Mr. and Mrs. Baynard, you know, Jews, they have air at my home, I don't. But I said, nobody ever invites me to his house for a cup of tea. When I meet them in the street, oh, they meet me and says, now how's the missus? I said, she's very good, you know, she's very well. I said, convey my regards to her, which I do. But nobody says, what about coming home for a cup of tea? So I asked them. I know it's a big joke, you see. I asked them, I says, you people, don't you know how to reciprocate? Don't you reciprocate among your own people? Of course you do. Then how is it that you don't reciprocate with me? I said, I tell you why. You see, at the back of your mind, at the back of your subconscious, you are thinking in terms of color. That if this guy comes along to my elite home in Durban North, or somewhere in Westville, you know, with his funny headgear and his beard, you know, looking for number 10 Downing Street of yours, and I see people are watering the garden and somebody is doing something else, and I come along and see the number, I come and knock at the door, and Mrs. Smith, you know, she opens the door, smiling face, oh, Mr. Dida, come in. So I go inside there, 5 minutes goes, half an hour goes, and the thumbs begin to wag. He says, what is this woman Mrs. Smith doing? You know, says, that coolie has gone inside so long. What's happening? You know, is she running a shibin or what? You know, I'm subconscious. You see, subconscious. And if I was there, and if his brother-in-law comes along, Mr. Smith's brother-in-law comes along, he'll have to apologize for my presence. You know what he's going to do? He said, this is Mr. Dida. You know, we went to his house, and his family, you know, they treated so wonderfully. We had such a lovely meal. All that you have to go out of your way to explain my presence there. If it was another Mr. Brown, he said, this is Mr. Brown. He said, hello, hello. Mr. Dida, you have to explain. How does it happen that this coolie happens to be here? So you have to explain. So this is at the back of the mind. Back of the mind. Subconsciously, this fear is there. So now, nobody invites me for tea. I know somebody might laugh. I hope you don't. Because I want to still keep on saying nobody has. So, we say, now that is laws. Laws change the characters of people. So by the time Jesus comes on the scene, the Jews had a law. Eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. So the Jews forgot forgiveness. See, I was trying to chase the birds. Suppose I was there then, in the time of Jesus. I was trying to chase the birds with the old-fashioned sling, the one that David used, you know, with a stone. And that stone damaged your eye. So you go to the judge, you say, look, this guy here damaged my eye. Damaged his. I said, look, it was an accident. My brother, I didn't mean it. I was trying to chase the birds from the field. So look, forgive me. He said, no, the law says an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. I said, look, I'll compensate you. I'll give you a heifer. I'll give you a goat. Forgive me. He said, no, the law says an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. See, he's going for the letter of the law. He's forgotten the spirit. So Jesus Christ, another spiritual physician among the Jews, he caters for their needs, for the sickness. The man has forgot forgiveness. So now he said, you must forgive. And forgive. How many times, Lord? He said, 70 times 7. That's in the Bible. In the New Testament. 70 times 7. Calculate, 490. 490. Are you going to take them literally? You going to start counting? He said, look, this is 10 times, huh? Now you have to take 99 times, huh? And now you have done 200 times. What it means is indefinite. Say, turn the other cheek. He said, if somebody says, it has been said by the whole time, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, but I say unto you, resist not evil. He who strikes you in the right cheek, give him the other. If a man takes away your coat, give him your cloak also. If a fellow makes you to walk 1 mile, walk with him two. He said, agree with thine adversary quickly while thou art with him on the way, before he takes you before the magistrate and makes you to part with the last farthing. Beautiful remedy for a sickness. But I said, you haven't got that sickness. I was telling the British, you know, I was there in London in July. And I was on BBC. You know, somebody started, you know, throwing stones at the Muslims. You know, jihad war, holy war. So I was telling them on BBC One, I said, you see, this holy war that we are talking about is a war of defense. You've got to defend yourself, your person, your possession, your faith. Everything that is valuable, you have to defend it with your life. And I said, you British, you did it. You did the very same thing when Hitler wanted to invade Britain. I heard Churchill, you know, I was young then, but I was hearing Churchill on the radio. He said, we'll fight them on the beaches, we'll fight them in the air, and we'll fight them in the sea, even with broomsticks. He said that, with broomsticks, you're prepared to fight. And you fought, you defended yourself. And then when the time came, you extended your hostilities. You started bombing Berlin and München and what and what not. You did everything you did. I said, you were entitled to do. As Gibbon, the master historian, he says, that in the state of nature, everyone, every person has a right to defend his person and his position and to extend his hostilities to a reasonable amount of satisfaction and retaliation. In the state of nature, everyone has the right to do that. If you have the right to do that, we also have the right to do that. But now, I said, you know, you people are good Christians. You were supposed to turn the other cheek. You were supposed to give your cloak when the man took away your coat. So when Hitler wanted to invade Britain, what you good Christian ought to have done is to tell Hitler, come, open arms, come, take over Britain and our empire as well. That is what you should have done, you know, because you were supposed to turn the other cheek. You were supposed to give away your cloak. You were supposed to walk 2 miles instead of one. So I said, no. These are all, we say, in the evolution of religion. This is how God Almighty, He caters for your needs, your sicknesses. From time to time, if the sickness changes, the remedy changes. The sickness changes, the remedy changes. So in that evolution of religion, we Muslims believe that Islam is the fulfillment of the teaching of Moses and Jesus. Actually, in real fact, we say it is one religion on different levels. However, if you have any questions, I'll be very, very happy to answer. Because I have been warned. He says, you know, much time has passed already. We were supposed to start at 5:30. I have been here from 4:45. I thought I was the only speaker. 5:30, I'm going to get going. But now, however, I'm very, very grateful to Mrs. Toms for this privilege and to the chairman for giving me this opportunity. And is there any questions that we can build further bridges? If there is a difference, why the difference? If there is a difference, why the difference? Why are we at war? In the Middle East. Why are you people fighting? Who? The Jews and the Muslims. What are you fighting for? So I'm telling my people. I get there's a lot of visitors coming to the mosque. This mosque, you know, incidentally Mr. Singh spoke about it, Mr. Chetty spoke about it, and incidentally also I have brought it for you. You know, it's given to you in the booklet. This mosque, the largest mosque south of the equator, this one here. On Fridays we get 4,000, a congregation of 4,000. The Durban population alone brings 3 busloads a week through this mosque. And among the people that visit us, there's an invariably people asking the question. He said, now look, what is the difference between your religion and the other religions? So I said, look, more especially with regards to Judaism and Christianity, the Jews and the Christians, we are the closest to the Jew. In our concept of the divinity, we are 100% with the Jew. The Jew says that God Almighty is absolutely unique. He has no partners. He has no sons. God is not seen at any time. No man can see God and live. And we give our hand of acceptance to the Jew that we believe as you believe. The Jew says no eating of the flesh of swine. We say we won't eat it. He says no eating of blood. We say we won't touch it. He says circumcision. We say we are circumcised. What more do you want? We believe in all the Jewish prophets as our prophets and all the heroes as our heroes. I'm not talking about the modern ones. With them we are at war. I'm talking about the prophets and heroes in the Bible. We accept them all. So we are at war. What are we fighting about? I said, we are both fighting for a piece of land. My brothers, the Arabs, they say Palestine belongs to them. And my cousin, the Jews, they say Palestine belongs to them. They are both fighting for a piece of land. It is not a racial war. It is not a religious war. The Arab doesn't say kill the Jew because he's a Jew. Jew doesn't say kill the Arab because he's a Muslim. No, no. He says, now this is my land, says the Arab, you stole it, I want it back. The Jew says, no, I inherited it 4,000 years ago, and that's a battle. It's a political battle. There's nothing to do with religion. With the Christian, we also claim a unique relationship. Islam is the only non-Christian faith which makes it an article of faith for its followers to believe in Jesus. No Muslim is a Muslim if he does not believe in Jesus. We believe that Jesus was one of the mightiest messengers of God. We believe that he was the Messiah. We believe that he was born miraculously without any male intervention. We believe that he gave back to the dead by God's permission and he healed those born blind and the lepers by God's permission. They are going together. The only parting of the way is we say he's not God Almighty in human form. He's not God incarnate and he's not the begotten Son of God. Metaphorically, we are all the children of God and he would be nearer to being the Son of God than any one of us, because he'll be more faithful to God than any of us can ever be. From that point of view, Jesus Christ is preeminently the Son of God. But our difference is, when you say that he is the begotten Son, begotten, not made, so we take exception to that. That is Mahaprabhu. So if there are any questions at any time now or in the future, if you like to visit the mosque, I think the telephone number is there. You can make an appointment and come. And it will also be my privilege if you come with your wife and just take you to the mosque, show you what goes on and take you all for lunch as well. That's on the mosque.
Mankind, and it was most interesting, and I'm sure every one of us had loved it.